Like many of you, I have grandchildren. My grandchildren live in Minnesota. And there are times that we talk on the phone and get caught up with each other. And then there are just some stories that stick with you a little bit more about your grandchildren, maybe. Well, they do for me anyway. This one exchange with my granddaughter, who at the time was 6 years old, and we were having a Skype conversation. And it was one of those times when she'd been on a break from school. And she was kind of not herself as we were having the conversation. And her mom came into the room and said, "Go ahead, tell Lita." She calls me Lita, which is short for Abuelita, little grandma, you can understand. She said, "Tell Lita what's going on." And so my six-year-old Naima told me about school and that she was worried because after a long break and going back to school, the kids can be squirrely. And when they're squirrely, they don't listen to the teacher. And when they don't listen to the teacher, then the teacher gets cranky. And when the teacher gets cranky, that means she wasn't going to have a very good day in school. And so I was going to solve the problem for her. And I was suggesting that she could be a leader. I thought she could talk to her friends. I thought that she might set an example. And you could tell she was kind of getting impatient with me. And she finally blurted out, "Lita, you just don't understand. It's a jungle out there." The wisdom of a six-year-old. Maybe you too, though, share this sentiment as you come to worship this day. I know that I have a heavy heart as I think about the last day's news, in fact, the last week's news. And even for the people and situations that I know of that are close to those, the people that I love, in what we can seem like a jungle, we are now celebrating the reign of Christ, or Christ the King Sunday. It is the end of our liturgical year. And so it's such a fitting gospel. As I read this Gospel of John, in fact, all of the Gospels, I'm again confronted with the radical nature of this message. My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here. To tell you the truth, I have found this passage to be a bit perplexing through the years. I get that Jesus' kingdom isn't from this world, but that part about if the conflict was from his kingdom, and then his followers would fight. And this week, a colleague suggested a way to look at this passage that made more sense to me. That what Jesus really might be saying is that if he and his followers were from the world, then naturally they would use the primary tool that we use that provides establishing and keeping power, and that's violence. But Jesus is not of this world, so Jesus will not defend through violence, and Jesus will not usher in God's kingdom through violence. And Jesus will take no followers through violence. Rather, Jesus has come to witness to the truth that God is love and that the cross is a sacrificial love. And his followers will fight for him to bring in the kingdom, not by violence, because that would violate the principles of the kingdom. Could there really be a more timely passage for us to reflect on after the atrocities of these last days and weeks in Mali, Paris, Kenya, Beirut, Afghanistan? Or after the escalations of violence this last year or two, of the excessive use of some police, especially around and against people of color? We live in a world that's dominated by the view that the only answer to violence is more violence. And the end of that result is that it's death. There are some traditions that practice pacifism. Some of our brothers and sisters, in fact, the Mennonite, Quaker, and the Brethren tradition, And I think that these witnesses of nonviolence can't be quickly discarded because they have made a difference in the world. Our own tradition, however, is influenced by Martin Luther's sense of God's two kingdoms, the one on the right and the left. And it stressed that the temporal authorities, like law enforcement and armies, have a place in this world. There's a critical role that they play in creating a more and a just world. And standing in this tradition, perpetrators of violence and terrorists everywhere should be opposed rigorously, they should be fought tirelessly, and they should be brought to justice wherever possible so that there can be less violence in the world. But I wonder where the church is in these conversations, because shouldn't we be some of the first people to admit that there are limits to the use of violence? Returning violence for violence multiplies violence. The truth is, we know that the world is a dangerous place, and no matter how hard we try to protect life, we are an extremely vulnerable species. And the truth is, Cain is still killing Abel. We know that during times of conflict, it is the poor, the innocent, babies, and the very old who often bear the brunt of violence. And so in the midst of these atrocities, where do we find grace and light? We will gather our prayers together a little later to say, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." So as I best understand, the kingdom that Jesus is talking about is about love. And as a part of that kingdom, from the reading of Revelation, we are priests and we are here to love God and to serve our neighbor. And I think that's what Lutheran Social Services of the Southwest does. Our mission has been about showing kindness, doing justice, and serving those in need. We exist because Lutheran churches of all persuasions, both LCMS and today as we know the ELCA, gathered together to conduct a needs assessment in Phoenix. And they saw that people were hungry, and they were without shelter, and they were without clothing. This ministry exists because there were partners that saw the work that needed to be done, partners like you. And together we have expanded to 10 Arizona counties, and we serve one out of every 90 people in Arizona. That's like 75,000 people in this state, to bring about the kind of community that we believe God envisions for all people in Arizona. We do this work together. And so today, as I read that, what is truth, I realized there's some truth about this ministry in which we are engaged. The services that we provide, most of them have been in the news, and they bring their own controversy. For example, the 18,000 children who have been taken out of their homes and are waiting in places that have no bed and no voice, but want a different kind of future. There are all kinds of questions about how to even take care of them and how their concerns will be addressed through the Department of Child Safety. Or how about the controversy surrounding how long we'll provide benefits for people? Right now we're saying 1 year. And as we serve people who are hungry and who are homeless, we realize there are a lot of issues. There are the mental illness pieces that haven't been addressed, or there's the physical concerns, or it's that they don't earn enough money to make a livable wage so that they might get along. We find that there's controversy around older adults. Services have been cut back so much that in some cases we can only go 30 minutes, two times a month, into someone's home to provide services because there have been such cutbacks. And now, this week, as of last Monday, our most controversial program is refugee resettlement. The governor has called for the states to resettle no refugees. In fact, last week, Lutheran Social Services resettled three families from the Congo who had been in refugee camps for over 20 years. Let's just be clear about this. A refugee is someone who has had to flee their home in order to be safe. Their life was in danger. They are often fleeing the same kind of terror that we are fighting. And the United States vetting process is the most rigorous in the world. People undergo interviews to assure that their story is right, not just one interview, but many interviews. At the camp itself, as well as with people from Homeland Security and from FBI, there are background checks, there are eye scans, and fingerprint clearances. The fact is that Europe has nothing like this in place, and after 4 million, imagine 4 million people being displaced in a geographic region that's so small that there wasn't a way to really process individuals. That's certainly a unique situation for Europe, but they're asking the United States how we have been doing this. I think that your community has discovered through the years the joy and the satisfaction of reaching out and supporting people who have been displaced. It's a way that we get to see Christ's kingdom breaking in. And in the midst of a world that tells us to stop doing this, that's really not how people of faith respond. We do the thing that we're called to do that's right in front of us. And when we do that, we get to be surprised at how God changes us. That's the message of Scripture, that God is present and God's message often comes through strangers. And the prophets of Israel and Judah, they were telling the people they were going to be destroyed because they weren't honoring the strangers in their midst, that they weren't taking care of the orphan and the widow. They weren't being hospitable as God had called them to be hospitable. But they were fearful. They were fearful about the stranger, and they were fearful of losing the land and the riches that they had accumulated. They forgot that they had been blessed to be a blessing. I think one of the reasons that we gather as a community is to confess that fear is strong, that it is a part of our human brokenness. And then we ask God to change us, to come among us and give us glimpses of the kingdom. So I have a story that maybe could bring this together that for me was enlightening in a way that I hadn't suspected. Last year, I got to walk a section of the Camino de Santiago. It's in Spain. And as I was walking on my second day, I ran into a young man from Germany. And this young man was telling me about the group of people he was walking with, that one of them was from Spain, he was from Germany, someone was from Brussels, and then he was walking with this other guy from Phoenix, Arizona. Now, how does that happen? I don't know. He pointed him out, and I was curious, and I wanted to walk with him, but on the Camino, during that 120-mile walk in 6 days, there's a cadence and a rhythm, so while you see the same people, it doesn't mean you get to walk with them when you want to walk with them. So I just kind of trusted that God would bring him to me when we needed or if we were going to talk. I was curious about him because he was the guy who would be the one organizing everyone. He'd go ahead and find the albergues, and he would see if they were clean enough and if there was enough space for his traveling companions. I heard the story of how he went to one of those albergues, and there he found a bed bug. And he went and got the owner and helped the owner take the beds apart, spray and disinfect, so that he wouldn't lose business during that week. I heard that he was the guy who gathered people together at night and would go out and buy fruit and pasta and some bread and wine and gather people from around the world to sit at a table and tell stories with each other. And the last day of my journey, there we were, the last 15 miles of my walking, there he was, and we got to talk to each other. And I was excited, and he asked me first if he could read me a poem, and I said, sure. And he read me a poem about God's presence in the Camino, through the mud and the muck and the sun and the conversations. And then he said, could I tell you something? And he said, this is something that I don't tell very many people, but my real name is not Tim, but Bao. I was born in Vietnam. And he said, when I was about 5 years old, my family, my mother knew there was no future for us. And so she gathered together a few of my uncles and my sisters, and we came over in a boat. I remember, he said, so little about it because I was only five, but these are the things I remember. That we got into that boat, and I remember people making fun of my sister because she had a can, and she asked people if they would urinate into it because she was thirsty, and how they laughed at her, and how we were all wishing we had a can after a couple of days. I remember my 8-year-old sister who refused to drink anything, and I remember her dying and people fighting about her. I remember her body being dumped over into the ocean. I remember landing on the shores of the United States where we were met by Lutherans. Lutherans who got us medical help. Lutherans who found us a place to stay. Lutherans who figured out how to enroll us in school and helped us to be a part of community. He said, I owe my life to Lutherans. God is funny. I did not go on this trip needing to reaffirm the work that I was doing, but out of the blue came this response about the work that we do that changes lives. By the grace of God, Lutherans have been a part of faith groups that have led the way in a variety of places, resettling refugees since World War II. There were people who said we shouldn't do it. In fact, we were a part of resettling over 260,000 Hmong people. And we did such a good job that there was some recognition that came from a Clint Eastwood movie, Gran Torino. Do you remember? The Lutherans brought them over. See, Jesus' kingdom is about love and care and concern and compassion. And so we gather together in our anxiety and our cluelessness and our questioning to grieve and to pray and to reach out and ask God to use us as we are so that we might encourage acts of kindness and compassion even when it looks like we shouldn't be engaged. In this crazy world that can sometimes seem like a jungle, I don't have really very many answers, but I do know this is true, that God is faithful and that Jesus always shows up. Jesus is going to show up again in bread and wine today to remind us that this is the body and blood given and shed for us, that we might be his hands and feet in the world. And I know this is true, that God calls us to love our neighbor. The people who seem hardest to love are really the people who were always asked to love. And that God will use us to bring about the kingdom if we let God use us. I have a friend who's a pastor here in Arizona, and he ends every one of his sermons with an assignment. And so I'd like to give you an assignment for this week. During this week of Thanksgiving, when we count our blessings and we thank God for each one of those things as we ought to, I wonder if you might go an extra step. Your assignment is, while you're thanking God for those blessings, to ask the question, how is God using you? How are you blessed to be a blessing? Not just in your family, but to the world that God loves so very much. Ahem.